Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and of course, the views of our certainly of our guest. And today, our guest is going to be Umberto Fontova. We're going to be talking about his book on the real Che Guevara. Umberto, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be here. Thanks for the invite.
All right. And of course, Umberto's family came here from Cuba, right after the Cuban Revolution there in 1959. And I'm going to let him tell you the story, perhaps of his escape, and then about Che Guevara. And of course, all the myths have been really built up about this ruthless, bloodthirsty killer, and of course, so much of what we know about him just isn't true. So you pick up the story. It's a great book. I've really enjoyed reading it, although I'll have to admit it got my blood pressure up a number of places. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, heaven knows we read a lot of bunkum in the mainstream press, but it is very rare to encounter a historical figure without one single redeeming feature, and that individual is Ernesto Che Guevara, whom Time magazine puts alongside Mother Teresa as among the heroes and icons of the century.
Now, I think it just tells us a lot about Time magazine and where they're coming from.
Right. And folks, what we're talking about, I should have mentioned this before, but for you to get the full impact of what that means, Che Guevara was the Cuban Revolution's chief executioner. Fidel Castro assigned him. For instance, let us imagine if Cho, the South Korean mass murderer from last week, the week before, there but for the grace of God went Che Guevara, except for the fact that he linked up with an immensely shrewd judge of human character known as Fidel Castro in Mexico, who channeled that bloodlust and that murderous passion that he had into something that, hey, let's face it, the mainstream media regards as laudatory, which is mass murder of anti-communists. Everybody knows by now that enlightened opinion worldwide considers anti-communist Cubans in particular, all anti-communists, but Cubans in particular, as intolerable pests. So now that we have got Che Guevara murdering thousands of them without trial, I've got a famous quote from him at the same time that he was being heralded in Time, in Newsweek, at the same time that Fidel Castro is being invited and honored and gets a whooping, stomping, standing ovation at Harvard Law School. His chief executioner is in Cuba saying, "Judicial evidence is an archaic bourgeois detail. We execute from revolutionary conviction."
And, of course, they killed about 14,000 Cubans for no other crime than having certainly been supporters of Batista, who, incidentally, was democratically elected. You're never going to read that in Time magazine, but certainly his last term in office, he was democratically elected. He was, of course, not running for re-election, and they had democratic elections, but of course that wasn't what the American State Department wanted. They wanted to bring Fidel Castro and Che Guevara to power. And of course they gave Fidel a wonderful, wonderful press, and they are still giving Che Guevara a wonderful press.
Oh, there's two movies.
Hold that just a moment. Uh-huh. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Umberto Fontova, and we're talking about his book today on Che Guevara. What is the exact title?
exposing the real Che Guevara and the useful idiots who idolize him.
Exposing the real Che Guevara, and certainly he was a mass murderer, and of course he presided over the execution of about 14,000 Cubans who were simply summarily shot and just before firing squads. A few of them had trials, many of them didn't. Certainly they just, of course, wanted to begin to establish this reign of terror in Cuba. Did you pick up the story there? Because your family lived through this, and they were lucky to get off with their lives. Go ahead.
Oh, well, yeah, what we're talking about a regime, people, and I'm ashamed to say this, but I'll admit it, because my book is about truth, not about feel-goodism. Pope John, when he visited Havana, when he visited Cuba in 1998, gave a speech at Che Guevara's grave, which is now a monument, and he spoke very fondly of Che Guevara's ideals, which just goes to show you the pervasiveness of the propaganda and how far it's gotten. When you have got the Pope, the Catholic Pope, lauding Che Guevara's ideals, you know that, you know, we're heading down the wrong path here. Let's face it. You know, because you'll hear it, oh, he worked for the poor. Oh, no, folks, we don't have to speculate about what his ideals were because they are right there 90 miles south of Florida.
Yeah, of course, 2 million people have escaped. What, about 80,000 have died trying to escape? Is that a fair figure?
Exactly. And what's very, very, very important to mention here, and I'm going to keep repeating it because I can well imagine a lot of our listeners going, well, so what, Dr. Stan? Latin Americans are always trying to sneak out of their countries and get in the U.S. Yes, folks, but they didn't do that from Cuba prior to the Castro-Che regime. As a matter of fact, prior to the Castro regime, when Cubans could get an exit visa for the asking, actually more Americans lived in Cuba than Cubans in the United States, and there is absolutely no Latin American country. In fact, there's probably no country in the world that can make that claim.
Well, Cuba had certainly one of the highest living standards of any country in Latin America, didn't it, before the Cuban Revolution?
As a matter of fact, than in any country in the world. Cuban laborers in 1958 had the eighth highest wages, not in the hemisphere, in the world. Cuba had a higher per capita, had double Japan's per capita income.
Hold that off right there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking with Umberto about his book, Exposing the Real Che Guevara. And he's simply pointing out that contrary to everything you've heard through the controlled media, prior to the Cuban Revolution, why the Cuban average Cuban worker had certainly the eighth highest wage level in the entire world, and it was higher than many European countries, higher than Japan. And so the idea that this was the uprising of the downtrodden masses against oppression in Cuba certainly has no basis in fact. The revolution was not an uprising of the downtrodden. It was a very, very small revolution by a small group of professional revolutionaries and, of course, represented the intellectuals, but not the average working man. And Fidel Castro never won any major battle, contrary to everything the New York Times and the Washington Post will try to tell you. But you go ahead and tell them this story, Umberto, because you've lived this whole thing, and I can tell from your passion how strongly you feel about it.
Because, I mean, every day of the year, especially now on this book tour, I find myself throwing facts, absolute, verifiable, documented facts at people who only answer in leftist cliches. You see, that's the whole nature of the Cuban Revolution. You throw a fact at them, for instance, yeah, but the gangsters ran Cuba and they ran Havana. No, folks, Havana had exactly one hotel partly owned by the mob. It was the Capri in Havana. Would someone care to speculate how that compares to Las Vegas or Atlantic City? And would someone care to tell me that Nevada and New Jersey need a Stalinist revolution that murders thousands in order to rectify the fact that a few of its hotels are owned by the mob? I mean, it's just the theater of the absurd, Dr. Stan.
I know, but they have to justify American policy that was really responsible for so much of what's going on there. And then, of course, most people don't understand the right and left do nothing but a plan to confuse you, because really, in my estimation, they're both run by the same people. And, of course, the American people are not getting the truth about Cuba, nor are they getting the truth about the hero Che Guevara. And you can actually go into restaurants right in the city where I live, and you'll see pictures of Che Guevara up there on the wall with his black beret on. And, of course, he is a hero. He is a revolutionary hero fighting against a wicked capitalist for the freedom of the people.
And as I said before, this took place only because of Fidel Castro, whom I consider the century's top press agent, only because he has had the American media eating out of his hand like trained pigeons for half a century. Only Fidel Castro could have taken such an absolute doofus, a bumbler, a coward, a sadist, and an imbecile like Che Guevara and turned him into this heroic figure with, of course, his accomplices in mainstream publishing, in the mainstream media, in television, in Hollywood. Only Fidel Castro could have pulled this off, because the man was a complete failure, Che Guevara was, in absolutely everything he attempted in his life, with the exception of murdering defenseless men and boys.
And, of course, you bring out the fact that this story of his death in Bolivia, you know, fighting to the last bullet, it sort of sounds like Jessica Lynch or Pat Tillman's story, doesn't it?
That's right. That's another thing. Oh, and the beauty of this is that there are two movies coming out this year or perhaps early next year. They're directed by Steven Soderbergh, who is an Oscar winner, and they star Benicio del Toro, a Puerto Rican actor who is also an Oscar winner. He will be playing Che Guevara. And they're going to lay it on thick and heavy, Dr. Stan. You know, the heroic ending so fast. When, in fact, Che Guevara surrendered voluntarily with fully loaded weapons while he was whimpering, "Please don't shoot! I'm Che! I want to see you more alive than dead!"
Well,
that was Che and another accomplice with fully loaded weapons encountering two Bolivian soldiers with loaded weapons. But, of course, even odds were never to Che Guevara's liking.
Well, the first thing is that, his men, however, fought, and they fought valiantly, but he surrendered when the battle was still going on. And that, of course, is unconscionable.
Yeah, he told his men, we represent the image of the Cuban Revolution and the proletarian revolution and so forth, and we all have to fight to the last bullet. And guess what? Most of his men did exactly that. One of them, Dariel Alarcón, who was a Cuban, managed to escape, shot his last bullet, escaped through Bolivia into Chile, back to Cuba, defected from Cuba in the mid-90s, now lives in Paris. And his account is one that features very prominently in my book, because he was there. He was there. All of these other movies and books that you hear are written by people who were not there, and they take Che Guevara's diaries, which were published in Havana by Fidel Castro's propaganda ministry, they take these at face value.
Well, now, of course, you actually quote a man named Felix Rodriguez, who was a CIA operative with the Bolivians. Did you actually interview him, or how did you get his information?
Well, no, I'm good friends with Felix.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, I'm good friends with Felix. As a matter of fact, the book that came out last year, the one part of this is called Fidel, Hollywood's Favorite Tyrant, is dedicated to the Bay of Pigs Veterans Association. And nowadays, Felix Rodriguez is the president of the Bay of Pigs Veterans Association. Me and him are very good friends now. Oh, yeah, we talked about this over, both on the phone and over dinner and everything else. Oh, yeah.
And, of course, he was there when the Bolivian... Why don't you tell the story of what actually happened as far as Che was concerned? Because, of course, we read these wonderful accounts of him, standing there, Viva la Revolution, and then he's killed by these wicked people from the government who are there to shoot this defenseless man.
Which is utterly bogus, by the way. The Felix and his, actually there were four Cuban-American CIA men who went down to Bolivia to help track him down. I interviewed all of them. They're all Bay of Pigs veterans, by the way. Heroic men, brave men.
Yeah, of course. They really had very little sympathy for Shea because he had killed so many of the people there at the helpless Cubans there when he was in charge.
No, he had murdered, good friends of these men. So you can imagine how they felt. However, their orders were to try to take him out of Bolivia alive, and bring him to the Panama Canal Zone, to the Southern Command, for questioning and so forth. But the Bolivians adopted a policy, which probably makes sense, because it is the same policy adopted by Americans nowadays who find an endangered species on their property. Shoot, shovel, and shut up.
And, of course, they were, I think, afraid that there'd be an international trial, and then there'd be Bertrand Russell wringing his hands, and then there'd be a Madonna, and all the people from Hollywood demonstrating to free...
Ramsey Clark at the time. You can imagine Ramsey Clark, Jane Fonda. You can imagine Bertrand Russell, Jean-Paul Sartre, this whole worldwide... They believe and said, no. This guy came into our country, started murdering our men, so forth. This is our... little gig here. We're very grateful that y'all came to help us, but y'all are advisors. We give the orders down here, and we say he sleeps with the fishes.
And, of course, the thing is that this man had personally supervised the execution of... how many people did he, do you think he personally supervised the murder?
Personally, I mean, as far as him actually shooting the coup de grace that blasted their skulls apart, it probably runs into the hundreds. But the fact is, the system that he put into place, the judicial system, well, I hate to call it judicial system, the murder system that he put into place in Cuba, the execution system, had accounted, and this is according to the Black Book of Communism, folks. This is not according to some Cuban-American book, by around 14,000 men and boys by the end of the 60s. When Che Guevara visited the United Nations in 1964, he boasted. He said, certainly we execute, and we will continue executing as long as it is necessary.
And yet, of course, he's pleading for his life after he's taken prisoner, saying he's so much more valuable alive than dead. So certainly he could have gone down at least fighting. But, of course, when it came to his life, it was an entirely different situation. And you paint a picture of Che Guevara, really as a man who really had no military leadership, no leadership ability at all, other than he could shout and yell, but he really knew nothing about military tactics or guerrilla tactics. Can you tell the story there?
Well, it is absolutely astounding because there are people, so-called historians, that will place him alongside Mao Zedong as a guerrilla fighter. Now, heaven knows I have no brief from Mao Zedong. The greatest mass murderer in history, probably. But heaven knows, he did fight something probably describable as a guerrilla war. The long march was 8,000 miles. Che Guevara walked half a mile out of his little encampment in Bolivia, and both him and his vanguard and rearguard groups got hopelessly lost and bumbled around for 6 months within miles of each other, actually encountering each other and shooting at each other. There is good evidence that Che Guevara, a man who people put alongside Mao Zedong and General Jap, did not know how to apply a compass reading to a map.
And, of course, the thing is that if you read so many of the books, and, of course, Humberto actually quotes many of these books, these wonderful stories of Che Guevara having nothing to do with fact. And really what's interesting is that Humberto has actually talked to many of the people who were there in Bolivia. They were there with the Special Forces unit and actually the Bolivian forces, which were tracking down there. But I think what's even more significant is that Fidel Castro, at least according to Humberto, and I rather suspect it's true, set this thing all up. He wanted to get rid of Che Guevara. He was a pain in the... Well, he was just a pain, and so he was sent to Bolivia to die, and that's exactly what happened.
Exactly right. That's why I use the term sleep with the fishes, because by the mid-60s, Che Guevara had become a bit of a nuisance. Castro never liked him anyway, really, because he was, Castro's such a shrewd, whatever else can be said about Castro, and I have said it all, especially in my book, Fidel, Hollywood's Favorite Tyrant, came out 2 years ago. In fact, Bill O'Reilly loved it, featured me on a show twice talking about it. In that book, I say everything there is to say about Fidel Castro, but he was an immensely shrewd judge of human character and of the human psyche, and he played Che Guevara like a fiddle.
He used him as a puppet.
Why
don't you perhaps maybe track Che Guevara's history from the time they were, were they in South America together?
In Mexico.
Pardon?
Yeah, they happened to meet up in Mexico.
Okay, good. Why did you tell the story?
Che Guevara had been in Guatemala in the mid-50s during the communist regime of Jacobo Arbenz. There was a communist regime there. Che was actually born in Argentina, but he was a vagabond. He was a hobo, a tramp. And he just traveled around South America and Latin America, mooching off of people, primarily women, holding no jobs and so forth. And so he drifted over to Guatemala when they had a communist government there, because he had Marxist leanings, and he couldn't even get a job with them. He was such a hopeless mess. And then when that government was overthrown, everyone will claim it was because of United Fruit, and I'm sure United Fruit was sickled to death that it happened. But, you know, people, that's what fascinates. People don't realize that there can be indigenous anti-communist revolutions, you know. What is it about these people? It's a form of condescension, because they say, oh, well, those dumb Latin Americans, those dumb Africans, those dumb Asians, they would never mount a coup to overthrow a communist government by themselves. That has to be the CIA. No. I can tell you from personal experience that Cubans had to try to beat the CIA over the head to try to help them overthrow Fidel Castro. But at any rate, the same thing happened in Guatemala, and that government was successfully overthrown. So Che Guevara fled to Mexico City, where, as luck would have it, Fidel and Raul Castro were in exile from Cuba. And they linked up there, and they went along on Castro's little expedition to overthrow Batista. And very early in the game, when they were in the hills, by the way, there was no guerrilla war, properly speaking, in Cuba. But Fidel Castro noticed that Che took special delight in executing defenseless boys. And he said, this may come in handy when we finally get to Havana, and I've got to eliminate all my real and potential enemies. And so that's when, you know, he started building up, and he made him a comandante and so forth. But the real Che Guevara legend, big one that we see the posters and the movies and the Motorcycle Diaries, didn't start until Che Guevara was safely sleeping with the fishes, because Castro did not want his own persona overshadowed by Che. Che came in very handy for him as a martyr, as an executioner first, but finally as a martyr, because Cuba was not big enough for both of them.
And I think one of the most amazing things is this idea about the guerrilla warfare in the Sierra Maestra, and yet there were never any real battles, were there? I mean, it was really, really primarily created by the New York Times and Herbert Matthews. All that thought, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we were talking about the propaganda that was created surrounding the persona of Fidel Castro. What people have to understand is that, you know, there really was no guerrilla warfare, you know, before Fidel Castro took over Cuba. It was all created by this myth that was created by Herbert Matthews of the New York Times, and by the New York Times, and picked up by the American medium, the Robin Hood of Cuba, the George Washington of the Revolution, the Abraham Lincoln of the, of the Cuban people, but it was all a fraud. But they had the best and most expensive propaganda machine in the world. They had the New York Times behind them. So tell the story then of the Cuban Revolution, could you, and the part that Che Guevara played in that.
Well, you know, you don't have to take it from me, folks, because I'm one of those crazy Cuban exiles, right? You can't pay any attention to us. Heaven knows in 1957 and 58, many of us were coming to the U.S. and trying desperately to warn the CIA, the State Department. This is Eisenhower's place. Hey, this guy, this movement that y'all are actually backing in Cuba, funding and backing by pulling the rug out from under Batista, is communist-backed. The leaders of it are communists. Ha, 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 ha. Of course, they scoffed at the Cubans, so you can't believe us. But don't take it from me. Take it from Hugh Thomas, who is a famous British historian. In fact, he was a Labour Party member who actually sympathized with the Cuban revolutionaries. But after he wrote, you know, I think it's a 1,000-page book somewhat, after he studied, and he said, this is an exact statement that I quote in my book, he said, in all essentials, the Cuban Revolution was fought in Washington, in New York, in the media. It had nothing to do with what was going on the ground in Cuba.
Yeah, that's
what it was. There were skirmishes here and there, but it was mainly a propaganda war, and it was primarily Cuba's upper and middle classes, especially the upper classes, who resented Fulgencio Batista. Batista was a mulatto. He was a mixed-race Cuban who had been born in a palm-thatched hut to former slaves. He was a grandparent of slaves. He was a very humble man. And the high, high society in Havana never really took to him. It was Havana's high society in league who was, you know, had links to the New York Times and to the CIA and all these people who spread all this propaganda about what a horrible place Cuba was under him, when, in fact, Cuba took in immense numbers of immigrants during that period. As I said before, when in fact Cuba had double Japan's per capita income during that period, it was a completely free country. But he was resented primarily by the upper classes, you know. And of course, you know, let's say the blue staters versus the Cuban red staters. Batista was a red stater.
All right, fine. So anyway, of course, then of course we see this massive propaganda campaign. But how was he then able to take over the country? And what about them up in the Sierra Madre? And what was Che Guevara doing during that time?
I've got a great quote. The CIA chief in Havana at the time was named Jim Noel. And at one point, Ambassador Earl Smith was a Republican interloper in the State Department, overwhelmingly Democratic ranks. Asked Jim Noel, hey, look, I keep hearing from my Cuban friends here in Havana that this guy Che Guevara is a communist. You know, I keep hearing this. What do you know about this, Joel? Remember, this is the CIA station chief in Havana. You might think he'd know a thing or two. So how does he reply to Mr. Smith, Ambassador Smith? He says, don't worry, Ambassador. We've infiltrated Castro's group completely. And Castro, no one in Castro's group has any affiliation whatsoever with any communists. My God. But like I say, but at that time, Che was the executioner in the hills. He was just the main executioner. And as a matter of fact, when they captured, the Mexicans actually jailed him briefly in the mid-50s when he was in Mexico. And in his pocket, they found the business card of the local KGB agent in Mexico City, you know. But the CIA, yeah, no communist affiliations. Your tax dollars at work, folks.
Well, of course, there's some of us who think that the CIA knew exactly what they were doing. Of course, they did not want the American people to know. But be that as it may, it's a terrible tragedy. Fidel Castro never won the revolution. We simply gave him Cuba. And if you doubt that, we have an interview with Ambassador Smith. Ambassador just referred to before Ambassador Smith died. It's one of the few interviews I know of. And he will tell you, everybody knew. The State Department knew, the President knew, he knew, but they brought him to power. Anyway. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and my guest is Umberto Fontova. We're talking about his book, and it's a fascinating read. Except, you know, as you begin reading about the Bay of Pigs, as you realize, of course, that those men were sent in there to die. They were not sent in there to win. They knew exactly what they were doing. It was like Korea and Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan, and simply another no-win war, only this time instead of American boys, here they were Cuban boys, who really believed that that the government would stand behind them. And so they were sent in and deprived of air power, and deprived of equipment, and literally fought to the last bullet. Why don't you tell the story of the Bay of Pigs, because it's a very courageous story.
It is, and we were just up on the anniversary last week. I wrote an article about it. If our listeners would like to cue into to Newsmax, it was also on Human Events, and they can. And it's called "An Anniversary of Heroism and Shame." It was it was amazing because here we are trying to nation build all over the world using GIs as a cannon fodder. Well, folks, we could have built a nation that was already built in 1960, and Cubans were perfectly willing to do their own fighting. All the Cubans were asking from the U.S. was logistical help, was arms and so forth. Lo and behold, they were sold down the river. They had a rug pulled out of them, too. Any time that you see the Bay of Pigs mentioned anywhere in the media, they will call it a fiasco. They will call it a debacle. In fact, it was a heroic three-day battle where the Cuban freedom fighters fought literally to the very last bullet. I had two cousins and one uncle there. My Fidel book is dedicated to this man. I have been honored as an honorary member of the Bay of Pigs Veterans Association because of my writings. And it was just, we had 16-year-old boys going up against Stalin tanks that Castro had gotten from the Russians. But, of course, the Cuban freedom fighters had not gotten anything of the sort from the JFK administration. It was just a... But to give you an idea, Grayton Lynch was a CIA officer in charge of training the Cubans, and he was right offshore. And he admits, this is a guy who fought at the Battle of the Bulge, at Omaha Beach, Korea's Heartbreak Ridge, and he admits to breaking down completely and blubbering like a child. He said, "Never in my life
have I been so ashamed
of my country."
Hold that thought. Well, Umberto was telling us about the Bay of Pigs, and really the story of the Bay of Pigs is a story that needs to be told over and over again because it's a story of betrayal. Sending men in to fight to lose. They were sent to lose intentionally and purposely, just like we sent our boys to Korea to lose, we sent them to Vietnam to lose, and we sent them into Afghanistan to lose. I mean, after all, we're funding the Pakistanis who are funding the Pakistani ISI, that's funding the Taliban that are killing our boys in the poppy fields and the mountains of Afghanistan, It's the same story over and over again. We didn't give our boys in Iraq the proper equipment. I mean, there are vehicles that are not damaged by roadside explosives. They have those. They're made by force protection. Believe me, the generals ride around them, but not our soldiers who are being slaughtered there. And, of course, never enough troops, never the proper intelligence. I mean, only a quarter of the troops that were needed were supplied. And then we wonder why we don't win the war there. But at the Bay of Pigs, which was really such a tragic story, I mean, they fought to the very last bullet. Well, there were planes, American planes, and certainly other American supplies, and we just would not send them in. In fact, we sent them into the one place of where they would be sure to lose. I talked to some of the strategists in the military who saw that. And they knew they were sent there to lose, but we can't tell the American people, "Oh, shucks, we just made another mistake." Well, anyway, then what happened to those people after they were captured by Fidel Castro?
Right. As a matter of fact, in my book, Dustin, I have got accounts by the U.S. naval pilots. Once again, folks, these are tough guys, naval pilots. They're flying off the carrier Essex. They are flying over that heroic beachhead where Cuban freedom fighters are being mowed down, and they cannot, they have not been allowed to fire. One guy is going into a dive. He was going to knock out a column of communist tanks. Came to the radio, do not engage. These naval fighter pilots admit to breaking down in tears because they couldn't help their brothers in arms on that beachhead. Well, it all came to an end after 3 days of heroism. They were all captured. And this is when the heroism, in my opinion, really started. For 2 years, they were in Castro's dungeons under a daily firing squad sentence. You got to remember, a lot of people were being executed. Hundreds of people were being executed at a time every week for crimes much, much smaller than what these guys had done to Castro's troops. Every single day, and I'm telling you from personal interviews with dozens of these men, many of which my relatives, the communists would come in and hand them a little piece of paper. Look, sign this confession that you're a mercenary of the Yankee imperialists who paid you to come here to... Do you know that these men, thinking, not thinking, but being sure that they were signing their own death warrants in the process, actually spat upon that document? In other words, the very nation that had sold them down the river, for all they knew, where they had seen their brothers dying in a field next to them, they refused to sign a little document. In other words, the very things that Michael Moore and the Dixie Chicks and Sean Penn and his whole crowd say in public all over the world for free publicity, these men refuse to say to save their lives. If that's not heroism, I don't know what is. Finally, they were ransomed back by Kennedy. His conscience was just troubling him, and they were ransomed back after 2 years. So what happens? Kennedy, JFK, gathers them at the Orange Bowl in Miami and tells them, don't worry, guys. I promise you to deliver this. It was called Brigade 2506. It was the brigade of the guys in Miami. I promise you to return this battle flag to you guys in a free Havana. When, in fact, the very month before, Kennedy had made his deal with Nikita Khrushchev to safeguard the Castro regime, promising that the United States would not only never invade Cuba, but prevent anyone else from invading Cuba.
And yet, of course, he promised these men that, of course, they were going to take Cuba back. It's sort of like Bill Clinton promising that our boys would be home from Bosnia by November. He just didn't mention which November. Or, of course, George Bush promising the American people that we were going to get Fidel Osama bin Laden dead or alive. He just didn't say when we were going to get him dead or alive. And, of course, what's so difficult for the American people to realize is that politicians lie. They lie and they say what you want to hear. But, of course, they are people without principle who, of course, will do whatever it takes to get the people behind them. Well, anyway, of course, then we have the Bay of Pigs behind us, and what does Che Guevara do after that? Now, the revolution is fairly well established. Was that about the time they sent Che Guevara off into Bolivia to get rid of him? Didn't he go to Africa for a time?
Right. He went to the Congo first. A complete fiasco. A total fiasco. He linked up, in Congo in 1964 and 5, just like now, there are a series of tribal wars going on. These are tribal wars going all the time on that continent. And leave it to Che Guevara to all of a sudden see something about the proletariat against the bourgeois. I mean, he was an ideologue, which is to say an idiot. He actually believed that there was some kind of class war going on in Africa when it was a fact that a tribal war. He went in there and he allied himself with soldiers who thought that by having special witch doctor water sprinkled upon them, it would cause bullets to bounce off of their bodies. And I interviewed several of the pilots who fought. These were CIA guys, Cuban-Americans, against some of the same CIA Cubans who went to their pigs, you might have thought that I'd been a little sore, you know, about what the U.S. did to them. Well, no. They volunteered again to go to Africa to fight Che Guevara there. You know, they'll fight communism anywhere. And they went there, and they said that they were, I interviewed these guys, they would do a dive. They were using Dauntless dive bombers, and they would dive down on the African troops that were allied with Che, and these guys would be waving at them. He said, my gosh, what's going on here? And they would naturally blow them down, and they're not particularly proud of this because it was a horrible thing. But they later learned that these guys down there had been told that bullets would bounce off of their bodies because of their witch doctor water. So here we've got Che Guevara, who is hailed as a masterful guerrilla fighter, allied with people who think 50 caliber bullets bounce off of human epidermis. You can't make this stuff up, Dr. Stan.
But apparently he really wasn't a very effective guerrilla fighter in Africa or in Bolivia or much of any place he went, was he?
He was a complete wreck. He barely escaped Africa with his life. He was a complete wreck. Even the Africans realized what a bumbler he was. Matter of fact, some of the men that were fighting a South African mercenary, Michael Hoare, had been a British soldier in World War II. It fought Rommel in North Africa, and he lived in South Africa. And this was an extremely proficient soldier. He was in league with the Cuban American CIA men, and they made absolute mincemeat of the communists, of the Soviet and Chinese backed forces that were linked with Che. I mean, made mincemeat of them. And Che finally left Africa with his tail between his legs. He was even afraid to show his face in Cuba for a while, but he finally went back to Cuba. And when we got to Cuba, it appears, it's hard to be definite, that he was under house arrest for a while. And then that's when Castro finally said, man, I've definitely got to get rid of this guy. He's a pain. Because what happens is that the Soviets were just tired of funding the mess. Castro had appointed Fidel Che Guevara as Cuba's economics minister in 1961, and he completely destroyed Cuba's economy. The Soviets were funding this mess, you know.
I think
going, this is getting expensive.
And you pointed out, for instance, that they actually had a shoe factory. And, of course, making shoes are nearly glued on the sole, and they'd been buying the glue from the United States. But because they didn't like the United States, they insisted that they buy it from Russia. And the Russian glue didn't work. And so the soles would fall off the shoes after you walked on them for 15 minutes. But because of their hatred of America, that didn't matter. The important thing was to turn out as many shoes as you could. You didn't worry about a profit because in a Marxist country you don't worry about such things as profits and losses. You just want everybody working. And so suddenly they've got all this money invested in the shoe factory and the shoes are worthless. And the same thing happened to just about everything having to do with industry, didn't it? This whole idea of central command and central control just doesn't work, does it?
Not only the shoe factory, Che also booted out the Coca-Cola plant managers from Cuba. You know, because heavens, if there's an item that's considered Yankee imperialist, it's Coca-Cola. So he threw them out. Well, don't you know that the Coca-Cola that then came out of that plant tasted dreadful, and nobody would drink it. No Cubans would drink it. Cubans would drink or accustomed to drinking real Coca-Cola. Well, lo and behold, Che goes over to the Coca-Cola plant. What's going on here? How come y'all can't make decent Cuba? And they said, they told him, because you booted out the plant managers, the previous plant managers, and they took the secret Coca-Cola formula back to the U.S. with them. Whoa, boy. That was a terrible bit of a disrespect shown toward Che, and he took those plant managers who had answered him that banner and sent him into a forced labor camp.
And, of course, people just lived in constant terror. It was an absolute police state. They had informants on every block. If you didn't like somebody, call them a counter-revolutionary, and you would be arrested, tortured, or maybe even killed. And so everybody lived in constant fear in Fidel Castro's Cuba. that have been brought to power by the American government. Let's tell our listeners how they can get your book. Do you have a website you'd like to get on there, Perito?
Well, no, I actually don't have, amazingly enough, a website of my own, but if they put Fontova, F-O-N-T-O-V, like in Victory A, there's only one of our families in the world, and Castro and Che, you'll get all of my writings, which are archived at Newsmax.com and at Frontpage.com, and my book, Exposing the Real Che Guevara and the Useful Idiots Who Idolize Him, along with my book, Fidel, Hollywood's Favorite Tyrant, are all available on Amazon.com and at Barnes & Noble, at Borders, at Books A Million, at all of the major stores around the country right now.
So that's Exposing Che Guevara?
Yeah, Exposing the Real Che Guevara and the Useful Idiots Who Idolize Him. That just became available just last week.
But
the Fidel book came out last year.
In fact, and we just got the book today, and I had to hurriedly read it, but it's a good read. And, of course, it has a lot of history there, a lot of things the American people really need to think about and to ask serious questions. How are these things happening? Because it's so much of what's going on today is like deja vu all over again. Well, basically, then, of course, after Che gets back from Africa and after he's out of house arrest, and really, Fidel Castro is concerned about Che Guevara because he feels that he could become a very, very popular man, and they build up sort of a myth about Che Guevara. So he's got to get him out of the country. Is that really why he was sent off to Bolivia?
Yeah, he sent him there. As a matter of fact, the CIA guys who I interviewed for this book were telling me the CIA was actually getting information via the Bolivian Communist Party regarding Che's whereabouts in Bolivia. As a matter of fact, Fidel Castro told the head of the Bolivian Communist Party, there's a famous phrase in the book, says, not even an aspirin, which is to say, when Che gets to your country, if he asks for your help, even if he's had a headache, do not give him even an aspirin. The Soviets, like I say, they had seen all of these harebrained guerrilla ventures wind up as disasters. I mean, they got nothing out of it. And that was at the time that they started regarding electoral communist victories. And let's face it, Allende won just 4 years later in Chile. So they were really on the ball. I mean, these guerrilla wars achieved absolutely nothing except to perturb the United States a little bit. And that was a country with whom they had concluded a splendid little deal to protect Fidel Castro after the missile crisis. I repeat, folks, people ask, well, you know, it's amazing how Castro survived all these years when we go all over the world. No, folks. Castro survived because the U.S. has protected him ever since October of 1962. That was JFK's pledge to Khrushchev, and Henry Kissinger renewed it when he was Secretary of State.
Well, of
that
course,
we would not molest Castro.
Well, of course,
that's why he survived.
Yeah, well, of course, then, of course, we saw the Elian Gonzalez episode where, you know, Jan Reno and Bill Clinton sent 125-man heavily armed SWAT team down to Miami to kidnap little Elian, to send him back to Cuba to build up the prestige of Fidel Castro. That doesn't make sense. Why do you think they did that?
Well, it's interesting because in my Fidel Hollywood's Favorite Tyrant book, I actually have an interview. People will recall back during the Elian Gonzalez mess that Juan Miguel Gonzalez, Elian's father, was featured on a famous 60 Minutes interview with Dan Rather. And that interview is what shifted U.S. public opinion, all in favor of sending Elian back. As a matter of fact, 71% of the American public, being so deluded, were actually in favor of sending him back. Well, I interviewed the Cuban-American who was in that studio during that interview. He was acting as Dan Rather's translator. And he said that Juan Miguel, Elian's father, was surrounded by Cuban security agents while he was in that studio, and that the questions that Dan Rather was asking him were being crafted and handed to Dan Rather by none other than Gregory Craig, who at the time was acting as Juan Miguel's lawyer, which is to say, as Fidel Castro's lawyer, and he was also Bill Clinton's lawyer at the time.
Yeah,
that is a scandal, in my opinion, that dwarfs the one that got Dan Rather fired eventually.
And of course, the thing is, of course, that CBS was simply acting as a propaganda arm of the Cuban Communist Party. But then, why should we be surprised? If you haven't read David Rockefeller's memoirs, which we carry, about the close relationship between David Rockefeller's daughter and Fidel Castro, it's David Rockefeller's memoirs are available from Radio Liberty. Well, Umberto, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay.
Go right ahead.
Well, like I say, folks, basically, these books, as I mentioned before, exposing the real Che Guevara and Fidel, Hollywood's favorite time, but they could very easily be titled Everything You Hear in the Mainstream Media, Hollywood, and Academia about Fidel Castro, the Cuban Revolution, and Che Guevara is complete bunk. Here is documented evidence to the contrary. You know, that's how I would sum up my books.
And I think that's really very, very true. I mean, we are still being propagandized today about Fidel Castro and the heroic revolutionary fighting in the Sierra Madre, you know, to bring prosperity to the people of Cuba who are downtrodden by the wicked capitalists. And yet, of course, you know, we're told today about how wonderful things are in Cuba, their wonderful health care system, their wonderful educational system, how happy the people are. What about the health care system in Cuba today?
Let's throw that out. In 1958, the year before Castro took over, Cuba had the 13th lowest infant mortality rate, not in the Western Hemisphere, in the world. Cuba had more doctors and dentists as a percentage of population in 1958 than did Great Britain. Castro did not create this. He piggybacked on it and actually made it worse. Right now, and this is if you believe the Castro government's figures, Cuba is 34th from the top with the lowest infant mortality. In other words, relative to the worst to the rest of the world, Cuban healthcare has worsened. I still have relatives in Cuba, and if healthcare was so wonderful in Cuba, we would have to send them aspirins every month.
And what about the prosperity of the people? I mean, you know, are the people really prosperous and happy, as we're told?
Folks, all you've got to remember this. I could bore you to death with statistics. Cuba took in more immigrants as a percentage of population in the 20th century than did the United States. People used to be as desperate to enter Cuba as they are now to exit Cuba, much less risking their lives with sharks and drowning every day. People are doing this as we speak, Dr. Stan. Nothing remotely of the sort ever happened before. I repeat, prior to Castro, people tried desperately to get into Cuba.
But, of course, we can catch them before we get here. We send them back to Fidel. And why is it our Coast Guard is sending people who risked their lives back to Cuba, where, of course, they will be certainly discriminated against? Because what was their crime? They wanted to be free. Thanks very much, Umberto. God bless you.
Thank you, sir.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we were simply pointing out, you know, that it was the American government, Bill Clinton, Jan Reno, who sent a heavily armed SWAT team, 125 men with, you know, flak jackets and automatic weapons, to Miami to kidnap little Elian Gonzalez, to send him back to Fidel Castro's Cuba to build up Fidel Castro's prestige. And then, of course, you know, people trying to escape from Cuba today, you know, if they can get ashore, that they can evade the Coast Guard, they can stay here. But if they're picked up by the Coast Guard, they're taken back to Cuba, where they'll be severely punished Why are we keeping Fidel Castro in power? We had an agreement with the Soviet Union that doesn't exist anymore. Why are we trying to bring freedom to Cuba? And the truth of the matter is, we brought Fidel Castro to power intentionally. And if you doubt that, you need to see my video, The World Revolution, because I personally interviewed Ambassador Smith. You'll actually see the uncut footage from my interview with Ambassador Earl Smith, who was the American ambassador to Cuba during the period leading up to the Cuban Revolution. And he will tell you, I knew even Fidel Castro was a communist. The State Department knew Fidel Castro was a communist. The president knew Fidel Castro was a communist, and we brought him to power. And that's exactly what happened, and we've kept him in power ever since then. You need a diversion, ladies and gentlemen. The Bay of Pigs was designed so those men would die there. And then, of course, we would give the impression, oh, shucks, there's nothing we can do about it. We can't try to invade again. Look, we failed, just like we failed in Vietnam, just like we failed in Cuba, in Korea, just like we're failing in Afghanistan, in Iraq today. And you have to understand there's a pattern. You need to see my talk. And this is only available now in video, although we'll soon have it available in DVD. And if you request it, we'll put your name on the list, but it is available in video. It's called World Revolution, and we take you through the whole background of this whole revolution and how country after country after country. The United States has actively worked to bring the communists to power, whether it be in Cuba, whether it would be in Vietnam, whether it would be in China, whether it would be in Eastern Europe. But the average American can't understand that. The close alliance that exists between capitalism and communism, and then, of course, the spiritual forces behind that. I challenge you to watch this a video and then tell me you've looked at the world through the same eyes again. Of course, you need to get my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, our new talk on the forbidden secret to really understand the spiritual forces that are at work within our society, within the world today. And this continuing world revolution, in fact, we just recently brought the Marxists to power in Nepal, and while your attention was focused on what's going on in the Middle East, while the people there in Nepal, of course, were brought under the control of the Maoists to carry out a revolution there with the full backing of your tax dollars, ladies and gentlemen, with the full backing of your tax dollars. This is your tax dollars were used to finance Fidel Castro and his revolution. And, of course, basically, there is no question that Fidel Castro was working with the CIA and telling him exactly where Che Guevara was. He was a useful idiot, and the time was for him to get lost and to be destroyed and killed. Fidel Castro has played a very dangerous game. And if you have not yet read David Rockefeller's memoirs about his meetings with Fidel Castro, how, of course, David Rockefeller admits to be parting of a cabal that is, of course, plotting to bring about a new international order, and about the close relationship between David Rockefeller's daughter and Fidel Castro, why David Rockefeller's memoirs are available from Radio Liberty, our telephone number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. Nothing is as it appears to be. Please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.